So I was in South Africa for 2 weeks, the end of October. I want to orient the talk here. It's kind of a sermon, kind of a testimony, probably more testimony than sermon. And I was really struggling with, you know, it's really easy just to show you a bunch of slides and give you a travel log of kind of the chronology. And there is a good chunk of that. The other easy thing would be to give you a really deep into Breakthrough Partners and what do we do. But what I really wanted to do was talk to you about what God's doing in my life and some things that he's teaching me 4 years after I retired from 30 years in the military. And I'm realizing that that God's got to change me in certain ways. And it's hard. There's some hard truths about myself that I'm learning in the process of doing some things that I feel like he's opened doors to do. So you're going to get some jumble because I don't know how to communicate quite yet with certainty. It's a work in progress, as is his work in all of us. So if I would put that all together, it's probably about 80%, 70% testimony. A little bit of Breakthrough Partners and a little bit of the travel log. But all the way through there is God's at work. And he's at work in me. He's at work in these contexts. And he's at work in us at CVP. So, again, Breakthrough Partners is a ministry I work with out of Seattle, actually Edmonds, Washington. We were there for a couple of weeks in a very different context. We've been working in these particular townships for about 7 years. My boss has. I'm just more recent with the work. And some of the lessons that God is working in me, that you'll find these themes throughout here, is this whole idea, and I've had this off and on throughout my life, is do we plan what we're going to do and then just ask God to bless it? Or do we ask God, what are you up to? And how do I enter what you're doing? I don't know about you, but most of my life it's been the former rather than the latter. I'm learning to more seek God and say, what are you up to? And would you give me eyes to see and ability to step into the reality of what you're doing rather than just saying, would you rubber stamp my plans? I won't go too deep into this, but 20 of the 30 years in the military, I was a contingency planner. War plans need contingencies. So you would have contingency A to triple Z. If this happens, you do this. If this happens, you do this. Because people would die if you didn't have contingencies. So I put a lot of pride in thinking through everything and having everything in control and having anticipated all the contingencies. So there was a part of what happened in Africa that I totally had no control of and I'll point that out. And I blamed myself for a while, and then I realized, but that was what God had, and you know what? Things worked out, and I'll point that out. There's going to be that theme through this. How do I participate? And then this really interesting, this is really a value of our ministry, is to realize that, you know, we don't come across the ocean and minister to someone as if, you know, we're condescending to serve them. We go with mutuality. We go to serve, not to be served, and to go minister with and walk with people. Hey, what are you doing? How can we join you? Is there anything that we can do together? Rather than, I have an idea, I'm going to impart it to you and it'll fix you. That's a whole new learning for me as well. And then, of course, the bigger aspects is how is God conforming me to the image of his son? And with all that, I left my Bible in the pew. Sorry. So this will be a little bit different, how we spend this time of the day. I'm actually going to allow you to ask questions at the end, so think about that. But Isaiah 61, 1-7, I didn't put that on a slide here, but I want to read that because this really does represent who we are as Breakthrough Partners. One of our mottos or logos is building leaders, rebuilding communities. And it comes from this passage in Isaiah 61. The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me because the Lord has anointed me to bring good news to the afflicted. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to captives and freedom to prisoners, to proclaim the favorable year of the Lord. Those two verses, or verse and a half, were the verses that Jesus in Luke 4 reads from the scroll of the book of Isaiah that was handed to him. He inaugurates his own public ministry by these words from Isaiah, and he says, and today these words are fulfilled in your hearing. So from Jesus' own words, he says, we are entering the time where these truths are true. Maybe not all of them, but certainly some of them. It goes on to say, proclaim the favorable year of the Lord and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn, to grant those who mourn in Zion, giving them a garland instead of ashes, the oil of gladness instead of mourning, the mantle of praise instead of a spirit of fainting. A really interesting transition in the way the pronouns are used. And they, those people who were brokenhearted, those people who were captive and were prisoners, and they will be called oaks of righteousness, the planting of the Lord, that he may be glorified. And they, those people who were brokenhearted and captive and poor, they will rebuild the ancient ruins. And they will raise up the former devastations, and they will repair the ruined cities. That's what we do at Breakthrough Partners. We go in to find those leaders, the theys, who God has planted and who are already growing up as oaks of righteousness, and we try to come alongside them and coach them and work with them and partner with them. And tell you what, I mean, the four times I've been, I get more out of it than anybody. So there's a mutuality in this whole approach. So those are some other passages that we use to define, explain the ministry. Real quick, I want to fly through some slides that talk about the philosophy and the approach that we take. We seek to build collaborative leaders, not projects. So we're not going to go build a well, we're going to go build a leader. We inspire local ownership, not outside sponsorship, and we promote savings and credit, not aid. If you think about where change starts, and the next is about the geekiest slide I have, but this was actually a slide that one of the African pastors used, and we just stole it from him. Where does change start? And the Bible says, as a man thinks in his heart, so is he. So we go through a process based on some biblical foundations that we break down the cultural situation, the individual situation. We build up, and over time, there's a breakthrough. In 3 to 5 years, through particular approaches that have been proven, we can lead a community from distress to self-sustainability following some biblical principles. We work with church leaders, primarily that's where we get the invite, but we'll work with children and youth leaders, business leaders, and we build them into a backbone team organization around these principles, and we build them to help them understand how to lead their community to sustainability, not in the green sense of eco-sustainability, but in the sense of being self-directed, self-supporting, self-governing, and self-replicating. We do that by building relationships of trust over time, and we go through about 3 cycles of over the 3 to 5 years of some principles and coaching, and it works, and it's exciting, and God seems to be changing people and lives. And so just before I left, the Sunday before I left, I said, pray for these things. I'm going for 2 weeks. Would you guys pray? You're my family. You know, I want to know people are supporting me in prayer. This was the whole lay down. I only have time to talk about the Cape Town part of the trip, which was about 9 days. And I'm probably hardly mentioned the two-day partnership workshop in Pretoria, a new area for us to work. Pastors from Swaziland and Zimbabwe were there. Pastors, actually, some farmers and community leaders from Zimbabwe. We had a great time, but I'm not going to talk about that. So the primary plot of the pictures you're about ready to see is a partnership that has been emerging for about 3 years with, actually, I got ahead of myself. Do you know how big Africa is? Have you ever thought about the continent of Africa? United States, China, India, Western Europe, Argentina, and New Zealand can all fit inside of Africa. That's how big it is. A little bit just on the landmass, 900 million inhabitants, 22% of the world's total land area. It's the most rich and wealthy continent of all the continents. It's got 90% of the world's cobalt, 85% of platinum, 3/4 of the world's gold. It's very rich. It's got some of the most, it's got 40% of the world's hydroelectric potential. It's really an immense, almost untapped potential. And yet what has happened is that there's a paradox of all that wealth and richness. It produces less than 0.1% of the gross domestic product of the globe with all that wealth and riches. 17 of the 21 poorest countries are in the continent of Africa. Life expectancy average around the continent is less than 50 years. 71% of the world's AIDS cases are in Africa. 15% of the children will die before they're 5. And one of the things that we work to counter is that what has happened most often is compassionate aid. $20 billion per year have gone into the continent of Africa since 1980. There's a human development indicators that the UN has put together, like infant mortality and education and gender equality, about 6 or 8 things. Every country that's gotten aid has gone down in terms of those human development indicators. So aid doesn't fix the problem. There's something deeper. And yet, it's one of the fastest growing churches in the world. So we were in the southern part of the continent, in the country of South Africa. They're in Cape Town in the very bottom, with the little arrow for 9 days, and then up in the middle at the capital, Pretoria, for the last part. Don't feel too sorry for me. We were in Yamhill County. We were taking some businessmen and a board member, and we said, hey, just, a decent place to stay. And we were in a guest farm in the middle of wine country that felt like you were in Europe or something rather than out in the, bush of Africa. Those are actually vineyards. That's looking east, and behind those mountains is the Indian Ocean. We came because a 3-year emerging partnership with a company called Ventus Technologies out of Holland, Michigan. The guy on the far left, Scott Liston, is the brother-in-law of one of our guys, and Scott is the CFO of that organization. The young man on the right, with the white shirt on, is Justin. Justin's the CEO. The guy in the middle is a guy named Eric. Eric lives in Reading. Justin lives in Holland, and Scott lives in Ohio. And we had met these guys, and they love the Lord. They're Christians. They have this incredible technology company that's got some patent-pending technologies about ready to change the world. They have an LED or solid-state lighting product. The bottom pink one is an agricultural grow light. For the first time, they've been able to actually target the light spectrum that certain plants like. It's never been done before in technology, and so the agriculture that use supplemental lighting. So part of the deal was, hey, we got these long relationships. We're working through the church. We're working through business. you know, why don't you guys come and hang out? We'll see what happens. They want to take us to Indonesia where they're doing some community development. So it was sort of like, hey, let's put skin in the game. We have no idea where God will take this. Part of my responsibility and why this got a little bit haywire of how things worked out was I was supposed to put together the meetings that these business guys would have with not just the churches but local businesses and government. And the guy in the red shirt, Charles George, was, and you'll see that has got this pretty big operation, knows everybody, knows the governor. He said, oh yeah, I'll set that up. And so I totally handed it over to him, and you'll hear a little bit more about how that worked out. Things got haywire fairly quickly. We've been working in that area for 2 years or 7 years, and in two different contexts: townships, poor slum areas, 70% unemployment, high HIV AIDS, high crime. These two pastors, Tom on the left and Aaron on the right, I'm not even going to tell you much about their stories. Between Charles, Tom, and Aaron, these are like guys with different levels of talents, if you will, from the parable. They're all using them for the kingdom. They're doing incredible things. I'm just going to touch on them, but they live in the big township that's 1.7 million people, 15 square kilometers, just sprawling, that goes right up to the edge of the ocean. I'm not hardly even going to talk about that. I'm going to talk more about what Charles is doing, more just because I needed a plot line. And he had set up these meetings with government where Ventus was going to show this agriculture grow light. Ventus has an opportunity to put a manufacturing plant anywhere in the world they want. And because they could use some low-skilled people, they could change overnight, they could change the trajectory of life for many people. And so there was a challenge to say, hey, let's come and just explore this and see what happens. These guys are, you know, good businessmen, but they're also believers. And so they didn't necessarily do market research to say we should be in South Africa. They just said, hey, let's go. They need lights too, so let's go figure it out and see if God is in this. Almost more on just a relationship based. But Charles George is this incredible guy in a little big God, small world story. I've known Charles for about 3 years. He was in Ethiopia when we had the meeting earlier this year. Really great brother in law. And somehow we got to talking, and he found out that I was taking some coursework through Regent University back in Virginia Beach. And he says, oh, I know somebody at Regent. In fact, he used to be a professor of mine at Bible school here. Well, I knew that my professor, Dr. Becker, was from South Africa, and I didn't put two and two together. And he says, Corné Becker was my mentor. And so here I'm talking to this guy that I've gotten to know pretty well, and here his early in life mentor is my professor in my dissertation chair. And I'm going, whoa, that's cool. So what Charles has done is through the church, Charles is a pastor, but he's very entrepreneurial. Through the church, he got the government to give him an old prison. And he's developed a job skills training center. And I'm just going to give you the tip of the iceberg. And I'm going to say this over and over again because this is so not U.S. culture and not U.S. church culture particularly. Everything that I'm about ready to share with you is being done under the umbrella of the church. So job skills training center. They have a savings and credit cooperative, which is like a savings and loan, that's part of the church. 30 members of the church of 150 4 years ago put their dollars together, opened a savings and credit cooperative with the equivalent of about $30. Today there are 60,000 members, and they have about $30 million in the bank from the church-run savings and credit cooperative. One of the reasons they were able to do that is they got wind of some technology that would allow cashless banking through a cell phone, buy and sell airtime, buy and sell electricity on your flip phone, not even a smartphone, which is what Charles is explaining here, how that technology works. So individuals no matter how old you are, if you know a little bit about, you know, buy low, sell high, you can buy airtime at low rates and sell it at high use times, and the same with electricity, and you can make money. And so they've turned this into an incredible business, again, under the, it's called flash banking, under and through the church. In another building, so that was one building in the area where the church is. In another building, and this is going to come up a little bit later, they're able to feed people. They've got a whole feeding program. They made 1.1 million meals last year. The church of 154 years ago is now about 500. And through the way they disciple the people, they figure they affect 400,000 people daily through the lives of the members of their church. The Grace Feeding Scheme was a way to keep kids in school because they weren't getting a healthy meal. And so the church said, we'll take the meal to the school. And if the kids are going to get at least one good meal a day, it keeps them in school. So there's a support from the public school system. They have a full state-of-the-art industrial quality kitchen. Again, this will come up later. In that first building, I showed you the Job Skills Training Center, and I could have. There's probably nine different pictures. I just picked a few. They have a tailoring class and a sewing class that teaches young men or women how to sew clothes and sell them for profit. In the same building, the business side that runs the flash banking, the church doesn't own that. They just are clients. The business said, hey, you guys are helping us so much. Why don't we put our call center in your building? So this is the call center, and my ugly mug is in the middle just to prove that I was there. So this is the call center, and they're briefing us on, you know, how everything works. And these are, you know, real people behind there taking calls of, you know, my transaction didn't go through or whatever. And this is the other stuff under the church, under the Zoe Skills Academy. They do computer training, full certified Microsoft, all the way to the, you know, professional certification. They have a baking and pastry job training, sewing, reading programs, a child care center that they not only take care of the children, but they teach you how to take care of children and become certified for that as a profession. They actually have like four levels of driver's license training that they're certified through the government to teach in this program. And it just goes on. And you're going, this is all under the church. This is all with a vision of, why not? The government's not doing it. Why not the church do it? So we put this thing on. The Ventus guys come. We get there Tuesday. We have some meetings. That first picture that I showed you was actually our prep meeting on Wednesday to figure out, okay, what are we going to tell the government? Let's get this thing lined up. That meeting was set for Friday at 1. Most of the pictures that I just showed you were Friday morning. Charles taking us through and touring us around and just showing us this incredible stuff that they're doing through the church. You know, and the guys are all ready. They've got their light demo and, you know, kind of reviewing. And, you know, 1 o'clock comes and nobody shows up. You know, 1:15, we're a little concerned. You know, 1:30, he's making phone calls. Nothing. 2 o'clock, nobody shows up. The government didn't show up to the meeting. Now, by this time, I'm beside myself because now the contingency planner in me is kicking in and I'm going, what did I miss? This is my fault. I should have talked to Charles, you know, 4 times rather than 3. And I'm beating myself up because this is why we invited these guys, to give them an opportunity to say this to government. It took me a couple of days to get over this. And it was still a jumble of emotion and frustration. And it was kind of cool because the Ventus guys is kind of, okay, yeah, that's fine. We're having a great time getting to know these guys. I mean, we've just been blown away by this incredible tour. Well, what was able to happen was a couple of meetings and connections were able to happen that afternoon because the government didn't show up, that wouldn't have happened. So that's kind of, you know, providential, God's in control. part one. So a little bit of backstory. The thing that happened in Ethiopia, 27 leaders from 12 countries that we had worked with over the last 9 years came together, and we thought we were just going to be talking to them last March and just kind of encouraging them. They wanted to start a Breakthrough Partners African Leadership Network that they ran. And so these guys were voted by the 27 to be the regional leaders of this new Breakthrough Partners African Leadership Network. Dan Moyer, the one white guy in the pictures, the third generation African missionary, lives in Zambia. Charles, of course, lives right there. Steve Tobella in the middle, I'm going to talk more about him. He's from the Pretoria area. The real dark-skinned guy with the white shirt is Kofi Tewas from Ivory Coast, Francophone Africa. Christophe is the guy next to him from Rwanda, and Aaron McKeeley, one of the other pastors right there. So these five guys, Dan's kind of the actually not a member, he's a coordinator, on our behalf. But these five guys were able to meet that afternoon. They were really just hanging out. They really laid out some plans for next year, some things that they want to do because we didn't have this other meeting. A little side story about Steve Tobella. So Steve is a businessman. He's a black. The social pecking order in Africa pre-apartheid was white, colored black, colored mixed intermarriage. Steve is a Zulu by tribal designation. Steve is the first certified African printer, a black African printer in the country. He was offered, before he took a job with us, to be the CEO of a printing federation. He's a businessman by trade. He had told us, and we'd see on his CV, that he had worked with the Mandela Rhodes Foundation. He'd been an executive director, and he told us stories about Mandela. And then he took us to his home, and he said, "I'm going to prove it to you. You see the guy in the lower middle with the white hair? That's Nelson Mandela." Steve worked with Nelson Mandela for 5 years, and that's the guy that we got to be the continental coordinator for Breakthrough Partners African Leadership Network. Incredible. Back to the main story. Gary Edmonds is my boss, president of Breakthrough Partners, and he's talking to Aaron, Pastor Aaron, on Sunday morning. Now, fast forward to Sunday. And what we had found out in the meantime, Aaron is the least educated of the whole group. Aaron probably has about a fourth grade education. We find this story out. He doesn't tell us. We had seen him also in Ethiopia in March. We didn't know about this until we got it from his daughter. So in Aaron's area, this is about what the houses look like. In January, a fire flashed through that area and killed a whole bunch of people. Like 600 people were homeless, and it killed a whole bunch of people. And Aaron had put this coalition of church pastors together, and they went around and got all the people and all the families affected by the fire and placed them in homes of families from the coalition of churches. And then Aaron and his wife made sure that there was food, that the families that took them in were getting, subsidized a little bit to make sure that. And he did that for 3 months, visiting every family over the course of a week. Well, the government heard about it, the city heard about it, and said, "The guy's not educated. I mean, he's got an education greater than any of us." And they're giving Aaron an honorary bachelor's degree for humanitarian service from the University of South Africa. So here's this guy. We meet his daughter. This is Sunday morning. This is the third worship service we've been. We've been in Pumeza in the white and black check dress. About 20, just a fireball. She's translating, sitting in the back of a room that's not bigger than our dining room and kitchen together. I mean, they got 80 people or so crammed into this orange walled. She's translating for us because they're speaking another African dialect from the back row. And then she gets up and translating like this. And then she gets a microphone. And here was two miracles that occurred, or a miracle and a gift that God gave me. The miracle was they actually had a a whole bunch more singing. And no kidding, and those of you who don't know me, I can't sing, I can't dance, and I can't clap in rhythm. But you know what? For about 30 seconds, I think the Spirit overcame me, and I was singing and clapping and dancing, and it was all in step and in time and in tune. And I thought, miracles do occur, but only in the presence of African worship. I mean, these people just get into their worship. So Pumeza now has the mic, and she's finished translating for the guest pastor, who was actually the director of a local Christian radio station in the blue shirt there. And I don't, you know, God, the Spirit just overcame her, and she said, and all of us now are in, 11 of us that came on this trip are all in this worship service, and she said, I've got a gift to give to you, saying to us, I've got a gift that I'm going to give to you. Now, what can, you know, a poor woman living in a slum in Africa, what could she possibly give to us? Now, this is a 20-year-old, incredibly gifted, and she teases us out for about 15 minutes of, I've got a gift that I'm going to give to you. And we're kind of like, okay, give us the gift. She said, from what my dad has said about what Breakthrough Partners is all about and what I understand you're trying to do, you're trying to change the world. You need the gift that I'm going to give to you, because to live the way we live takes a lot of courage and takes a lot of faith. And she said, I want to give you the gift of our courage, because God's got something big in store for you in this ministry and what you're trying to do for Africa. Will you accept the gift of our courage? That was Sunday afternoon. What had transpired over the course of the week was, we're at this beautiful guest house, and we meet this guy named Derek, who's our chef. We get two chef-made meals a day. We get to know this guy. He'd been in the Army. We started telling war stories together. He banged himself up in a motorcycle accident. And Friday, we'd been with him, you know, 4 or 5 days, and he got the courage to tell us a dream that he'd had, that he wanted to open a chef school and basically a restaurant management. And it was very humbling. It was, you know, I'm laying this out here. I don't share this with everybody. I've shared it with the family that owns the farm. And we were honored that he would share that with us. We had no idea. We just took it. Hey, that's kind of cool. So Monday night, we're getting ready to leave for Pretoria the next day. We had a banquet. We asked all the three main pastors, their wives. Pumeza's a little bit dressed up on the left. The two white guys in the middle and their wives are the guys that brought us there originally. Justin's on the top there. Justin finally got an opportunity during our banquet to show his light demonstration. And Derek had asked permission. Here's a look at the banquet. Don't feel sorry for me. Derek had asked permission to bring the owner's son into this meeting. And we said, hey, these people, that group of people, they'd love to hear your story, Derek, about what your dream is to open a job skills training around chefing and restaurant management. And he says, before I do that, let the owner's son, Fawny is his name, share a little bit that the family's behind me, and they want to see this happen too. So what we didn't know was that Fawny had managed the farm for 12 years before he now goes to working for a computer software company. And he hears Justin's story about agriculture lighting. Now, this is the night before we're going to leave. He hears Justin's story about lighting and wanting to get into the agricultural market and the government not showing up to the meeting. He goes, I know 5,000 growers. They're on my Rolodex, half of them are on my speed dial. Just tell me what you need and I'll get you information about the South African supplemental lighting and agricultural market. And we're going, how God is that? you know, that we didn't even look for that, and here it's right under our nose. And then Derek, afterwards, is introduced. Daniel Stegman's the guy right in the middle of that picture with the gray hair. Daniel's a connector, had brought Gary over originally. Daniel gets Charles with that job skills training center and that kitchen, and Daniel gets Derek and says, don't wait to build the building. You could start classes right now with what Charles is doing in the township. You could do this right now. And so this meeting right at the end of dinner is striking this deal that Derek is going to take his culinary skill and go plug into that job skills training center and open a chef school with the industrial kitchen. And God lined all that up, and none of that was planned. And that's how it was supposed to be. And I'm going, okay, what are you trying to teach me? One is to be able to go with the flow and trust him for bigger things. So we need to end with a required sunset. All missionary briefings end with a sunset, right? This was up in Pretoria. A storm was brewing on the horizon, and the Africans who had lived there said this was the most beautiful sunset that they had ever seen. And I just wanted to share that with you. I thought it was awesome. So we have some partners in Africa who want to go far, and we're going to go with them, and we're going to trust God, and we're going to see what he has for. Amen.